So as I said, all over there are people that are looking at St. Francis, that are blessing animals. And St. Francis, his birthday was on Friday the 4th, about 800 years ago he lived. And yet, for some reason, now more than ever, his voice seems to be so utterly important in so much of what we do. As we look at the world, we look at a climate that is in crisis, and we pay attention to these words that are 800 years or more old. So many of the stories, so much of what we know about St. Francis is not from his written words. The words that John just read for us are just a couple of examples, one of a few samples of what we have of what was written down, that somebody copied down of what he had to say. Most of what we have from St. Francis are stories of his interactions with people, stories of his interactions with the world, stories in particular of his interactions with animals. They're the stories of the birds that would flock to him, and he would preach sermons to the birds, and he would extol the birds to make sure that they are always grateful for the fact that they neither toil nor sow, but that they have beauty in all that they have. There are stories that are told of St. Francis in which there were bunny rabbits that were caught in traps that were brought to him, and he would hold on to that bunny rabbit, then take it out into the wild, and the bunny rabbit would come back, and he would take it out in the wild, and the bunny rabbit would come back because it so desired to be part of him. There's a story of his donkey that he rode on throughout of his life, and when he died, they say that the donkey wept and wept and wept. And there's a story of the Wolf of Gubbio, probably my favorite story of all of the stories of St. Francis and the animals, where there is this wolf in the town of Gubbio that is attacking the town, not just attacking the animals and looking for food there, but actually attacking the human beings. And the people are just so upset about what is happening with this Wolf of Gubbio, and they form together a vigilante team, much in the same way we know that if there's a shark attack, there are those that will go out on boats and they will say, "We're going to go find that one shark that attacked," and all that. And so they all go off to go find this Wolf of Gubbio, and the wolf challenges and threatens them, and people are afraid, and St. Francis walks into town. And St. Francis says, "Well, let me have a hand at it. Let me try this out." And they say, "St. Francis, you're too important. We can't risk you." And he says, "Let me go out there." And he goes out into the wild with people trailing behind him. He goes out in the wild and he finds the wolf, and the wolf sees him, and the wolf goes charging right up at him. And right at the last moment, St. Francis says, wait, wolf. And the wolf waits and stops. St. Francis begins to have a conversation with him and begins to talk to him and begins to find out what's really going on. And what's really going on is that the wolf is hungry. And when we get hungry, we sometimes get hangry, right? And when we get hangry, we do stuff that we are not really all that excited about that we're doing. And so the wolf has been hangry and has been attacking the town and doesn't really mean to. And so St. Francis says, "Let's make a deal." Puts his hand out. Wolf puts his paw in St. Francis's hand. The people are going, "What is going on here? What's going on?" St. Francis says, "Let's go back into town." And the wolf and St. Francis walk back into town. And St. Francis says to the people of Gubbio, "We've had a conversation here." And the people are going, "Are you kidding me? That's the wolf." St. Francis says, "I know." The wolf says he's sorry for what he has done. Did not mean to be such a horrible, horrible wolf. But he's hungry. So we have a deal. Will you all feed the wolf? You feed the wolf. He can come up to your house. He can scratch on your door. If he scratches on the door, you put some food out. He will no longer be hungry. In exchange, the wolf will protect this town. And for the next 2 or 3 years, that is the deal, until the wolf passes away, that the Wolf of Gubbio protects the town from all unsavory folks that might come in. And always when the wolf is hungry, just would scratch on the door and the people would feed him. And every story, whether it's the bunny rabbit, the birds, the donkey, probably the lizard that came to find St. Francis, who knows, whether it's the Wolf of Gubbio, they are all stories of St. Francis in connection with these animals, seeing the animals as full beings, as full creatures of God. Not seeing them as other, not seeing them as something else out there, but seeing them as endowed with the gift of the presence of God and treating them with humility, and in return being treated with humility from them. Powerful stories for us to think about, and we go, "Oh, well, they're like fairy tales." I mean, who would actually go out and go put his hand out and go talk to a wolf? And yet we see stories like this happening in our world all around us. In the book, How Can I Help? By Ram Dass. This book right here, it begins with a story of a person whose boat is capsized and he's far from shore. And when he falls into the sea, he begins to see the ominous figure of sharks that begin to circle around his boat. And he begins to be afraid. And then there is a dolphin that comes in. And this is a true story. And the dolphin comes in. And the dolphin comes up to him and allows him to grab a hold of his dorsal fin. And the dolphin swims him into safety. Google. Go on Google and look under YouTube and find, just say, animals acting wonderfully with human beings, and you'll find a story of this old elderly chimpanzee. Mark and I showed this to Mark because of the work that he's done with chimpanzees, who is about to die. But at the last minute before the chimpanzee is about to die, one of the people that had once worked with the chimpanzee years before comes. And you see the chimpanzee's eyes open, and you see this big smile break out on his face, and she reaches up and grabs a hold, and you can see her touching the back of the man's head. Same thing, Christian the lion, who was raised by these two men until he got too big, and they allowed Christian to go back out into the wild. And years later, they came back, and all of a sudden, they hear a noise and they hear a sound. And Christian the lion has broken from his pride at that moment and comes running up to them and leaps into them, doesn't give them a bear hug, but gives them a lion hug that is amazing. There are stories like this all over of elephants grieving, of animals doing things that we think are that which only humans can do. And yet it's not true. The stories of St. Francis are stories that we see. We just don't see them that often. We have attuned ourselves away from them. They become different stories. Stories that are strange and all. But what if those are actually the real stories? What if that is, in fact, what the biblical message is? And in true, when you listen to what John just said, there are such amazing things from that second chapter of Genesis that we read about. Because first and foremost, what you read is that we are of the same substance, the animal world, in ourselves. Genesis chapter 2, verse 7 says, from out of the fertile ground, God reaches down and forms the first human being. And 10 verses later, it says, and from out of the fertile ground, God reaches down and begins to form all of the animals. We are of the same substance, of this very same thing. And science tells us that 13.8 billion years ago, when there is that Big Bang and the Big Bang releases into the universe, all that is the universe, that stardust that we are made of, is the very same thing that the animals that we share this planet with are about. That chimpanzee who reaches up to touch that man shares 98.5% of our DNA. 98.5% of the same DNA. Those dogs and cats and all that were up here, 80% of our DNA. Even a lizard has about 60% of our DNA. A banana tree has about 60% of our DNA. We are of the same substance. From out of the ground, the Bible tells us the very same thing, is we are created all together. That 8.7 million other species that we share this planet with, we are of the same. Now, it does say to us that the reason why God is creating these animals is to find for us what is translated as a helper or a partner. Terrible translation, most of the Bible scholars will tell us. Instead, what it's really looking for is that which will complement us, that which will complete us. Think yin-yang. That which is like the left hand to the right hand. That is like the left wing to the right wing. Try and clap with only one hand. Try and fly a plane with only a left wing, only a right wing. What God is creating and looking for is that which for the first human being will be that which will complete that human being with strength and with power, will be an utter and complete complement. And in fact, I know, it's amazing. In fact, what is happening is what the story tells us is that the first human being, some people say, the Jewish scholars say, was like an androgynous human being that was separated. And as it was separated, the yin to the yang, we now have the male and the female. They are complete one another, is what we have there together. We have this amazing thing, but it's a different process. It's a different process. It's not out of the ground. It's a separation. And the very fact that the process is different, the very fact that the animals that are created don't create this utter yin-yang that God is seeking does not mean that they are devalued in any way. Because the story does not say, and God creates all the animals, and they just don't quite fit the picture, and so gets rid of them. Instead, God creates these animals and brings them to that first human being who names them. Names them. Every time you hear the Hebrew word that talks about names, the plural of names, it is talking about the actual name. The names of the children of it, the names of the children of Jacob, the names of the tribes of Israel, the names of David's children, the names are that which give personality, that which give reality, that which give beauty, that which give wonder. And the animals are brought before it and they are given names. They are not given classifications. They are not given codes. They are not, this is Linda. This is not Caucasian woman who has retired. This is Linda. Right over here. This is Peter. This is not tall Caucasian man who also has retired or is about to. Almost. This is Peter. They have names because they have personality, they have reality, they have substance, they have wonder. So God brings the animals to Adam, and Adam gives them names. And we know that. We know that from those very animals that were up here crowding the altar just a little bit ago, that those that we have named, those animals that we have named, become a part of our lives. That little dog sitting in my arms, Koa, where did he go? He's in the back. Koa, we know everything. We know his personality is intertwined with us. We know that at 8 o'clock at night, he's tired. And he goes and he lays down in his little dog bed in the living room, if that's where we are. And we know that at 9 o'clock, if we're still there, he will get up out of his dog bed and he will look at us and say, "What? Is it not time to go to bed?" And he will then go into our bedroom and get up on our bed so as to say, "I'm leading the way." We know that. We work into our life the fact that he understands his job is to patrol and protect, which means he's got to make a whole lot of noise when those big dogs go walking in front of the house. We know that. We know that about him in the same way that we know his joy is a part of our life. In the same way that we know that Puna, the dog that we had out at Camp Mokuleia, was a part of our life as an empathic individual who, when children were struggling with being at camp, we would just give them some Puna time. And they would sit with Puna and life would go well. We know that in the same way, Keiki, the dog we had when our children were small, knew that his job was Child Protective Services. And his job, and he took it very seriously, that his job was to make sure that Micah and Naya, little Micah and Naya, were safe. Or that Tiger, the cat that we had, that Tiger understood Tiger's role was to organize the ohana. And so when we would take the dogs on a walk and come back down the street, Tiger would be waiting at the end of our driveway and would then walk to the end of the street to lead us home, to organize the ohana always two or three steps ahead because that was Tiger's job. We know this about them. They are a part of our lives. And so we think about this and we think about the reality of those 8.7 other million species that we share this planet with, we think how utterly amazing is this world that we get to be in because they add color, they add wonder, they add joy, they add personality, they have beauty to our lives. Robin Wall Kimmerer, who I've referred to before, who wrote this marvelous book called Braiding Sweetgrass, said these words, "We live in a world with singing whales, talking trees, dancing bees, birds who make art, fish who navigate, plants who learn and remember. We are surrounded by intelligences other than our own, by feathered people and people with leaves." I love that. That comes from out of her Powhatan, her Native American heritage. That she understands that we are peopled by a world that is not just people, with intelligence and beauty and wonder. St. Francis understood that, and we can understand that as well. And I've been thinking about this. So about 4 months ago, five, whenever it was June, however many months ago it was, Mark and Linda led us through a wonderful adult ed session on this book by Jim Antall called Climate Crisis, Climate Church. And in that book, Jim Antall, UCC minister, encourages all of the churches that we need to pay attention to the crisis. The emergency is right in front of us, and we need to be preaching about the climate, because if the churches become engaged, the world can shift and change on that. And I took him seriously, and I did something I've rarely done before. As I looked at the next 4 months, and I said, what am I going to preach about this Sunday and this Sunday and this Sunday? And I looked at scriptures, and Angie and I, we looked at hymns, and I've changed them every single week, because what I began to discover, that even though I planned out 4 months ahead, and even though I planned to be utterly intentional about preaching about the climate crisis, I found myself every week veering away from the climate crisis, veering away from the reality that we do know that this climate, this Goldilocks climate that we have that is just right, is under threat. Utterly under threat. And we need to pay attention to technology. We need to pay attention to habits. And yet what I've come to recognize is that what we really need to pay attention to is the orientation of our spirits, the orientations of our hearts, the orientation of ourselves to God's creation. We have spent too much of our time seeing ourselves as apart from instead of a part of. We have not allowed ourselves to be humbled before, to be present with God's creation. We have not allowed ourselves to see ourselves as kin, as akin to all that God has created. Instead, we have placed ourselves against all that God has created in so many ways. It's a shift of our heart. It's a shift of our orientation. And it can begin anywhere. You can take the words of St. Francis and you can look and see the creation and see Mother Earth, see Brother Sun, Sister Sun, Brother Sun, Sister Sun, Brother Moon, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, sorry, Brother Air, Brother Wind, Sister Water, even Sister Death. You can see all those as part. But for some of us in the West, that just feels like pretty poetry. But we see with these animals that we've brought in that indeed there is a connectivity that we have with what God has created. So why not start there? Because there we can begin, and we can begin to shift our orientation. And if it begins with the animals that live in our homes with us, perhaps then it continues to animals that are more in the wild, or animals that are being cared for as domesticated in one way or another, and we look for humane ways that we live with them. We need to shift the orientation of our hearts, and why not allow these gifts that are a part of our lives to be part of that shift and that creation. Robin Wall Kimmerer, in this book, Braiding Sweetgrass and Other Places, talks about the fact that not only do we need to do all of that, but the fact of the matter is it's very difficult. And some of what makes it difficult is our language limits us. We in the West, using English language, have a language that is very objectifying. Anything that is not human is an it. A paperclip, a tractor, a dog, a cow, a bird, a roof, those are all it. We don't have pronouns that give us beingness, that understand the personality of that which God has created and imbued with life. And so she looks back into, in her book, she looks back into her own Abishinabe language, and she goes, there is a word that we have in that language that celebrates the beingness of all that God has created. Problem is, the word is 6 syllables long. It's hard to do 6-syllable long pronouns. But she looked at the word, and the last 2 letters of the word are K-I, key. She said, what if we just begin to shift our language in such a way that we adopt as the pronoun for that which we have given as an it, but really has beingness and beauty as part of what God has created, and call it key? So that when I go walking on the beach in Kailua morning and I see the Eva birds that are flying above me, and a single Eva bird, and I can say, oh, look, Ki is here with me. Not it, but Ki is here with me. And she says, and what is the plural of Ki? Well, you just add an N, kin. The pearl of Kish is kin. So when we watch Paul mow the lawn and the egrets come flying in to follow after Paul, not just because they're bugs, but because they really like Paul. They let Paul come up and touch them. This is amazing to watch Paul and the egrets. If we do that, we can say, look, Paul's kin are right here with him. And if we just begin to shift our language in these little ways, she says, it changes the way we view the world. What if indeed, here at this communion table, when we say all are welcome, and we say all of us are kin to one another, we actually mean all of us. That all of us indeed are welcome. That it is not just we who look like a human being that are welcome to the table, but that the creation that God has blessed us to be a part of is a creation that includes all key and kin of the world. We can leave it for bulldozers and tractors, but we can take key and kin and become part of our lives as we begin to shift the relationship that we have with God's creation. As we begin to allow ourselves to understand that we are blessed to be a part of, not apart from. All of a sudden, this table in which we say, in Christ there is no east or west, in Christ there is no south or north, no Jew nor Greek, no male nor female, there is also key and kin that are here. That Christ has come. Christ has come in a way to give life to all in which there is life. Whether that be the blessed animals that were up here in front of us, whether it be the blessed community that sits here in front of us, whether it be the blessed mountain that is in there at the back of Manoa Valley, the blessed ocean that is before us, the blessed animals of the field, of the air, of the sea, whatever it is God has given the beauty of life and wonder to, let's welcome them. And so in the same way, when we gather together at this table and we look and we realize that on that last night when Jesus was gathered there with his disciples and he took this loaf of bread and he broke it and he said that this is my body which is broken for you, to do this in remembrance of me, that brokenness goes beyond just those 12 people that were gathered at the table with him. It goes thousands of years later to include us now. It goes broad across the world. It goes broad across the creation. That a body has been broken for us, and we are to do so in remembrance of him. And in the same way, the cup is poured, and when that cup is poured, and this is the new covenant which is in his blood that has been shed for us, we are invited to be part of that new covenant, to give of our lives to one another, to give of our lives to this world, to this creation, to be indeed part of the blessing that he initiated with his life amongst us, that is initiated when God comes to live amongst us, that is initiated right here at the table, broken and shed for us. So the table is set. We all know we are welcome. The way that we welcome the rest of the world is the way in which we live, whether it be with the animals that are at our feet in our homes, whether it be with those that are within the community, whether it be the mountains, the seas, whatever it be, we live our invitation to the table in this world amongst all that God has created, key and kin, all over this world. Amen.